Case on our docket today is 73154 Rodriguez versus State. Mr. Petty and Mr. Plater. Justice Sherry is with us by way of Las Vegas this morning. With that being said, ready to go? Please do so if you wish to reserve time. Please so state.
Thank you, Chief Justice Douglas. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. My name is John Petty. I'm with the Washoe County Public Defender's Office, and I'm here this morning on behalf of Mr. Rodriguez. The appeal presents a single issue for the court's consideration. The background is fairly simple. Mr. Rodriguez entered a guilty plea to one count of battery, resulting in substantial bodily harm committed upon an adult person, and was given a sentence on the battery, and then was given a second sentence of the older person enhancement. Our position today is that by virtue of the structure of the statute, the battery statute, NRS 200-481, and based on some case law that the court previously provided, that Mr. Rodriguez was subjected to double enhancement, which under Nevada law in the 1980s was improper, and that we're going to be requesting this court to vacate the sentence that was imposed below, remand for a new sentencing. So I'd like to start. I think we can all agree that the older person enhancement is a standalone enhancement in Chapter 1 there. There's no dispute about that. So the fact that we're here today suggests to me that the dispute is that 200, my reading is 241. But I want to suggest at the outset that the findings of this court implicitly, if not explicitly, already agree with me, and I'll tell you why I think that. In 2011, in a case called Hobbs v. State, Justice Sabo wrote an opinion for a panelist report that included Justice Sherry and Justice Gibbons, no dissent, where she concluded that the primary crime of battery is stated in NRS 281, subsection 1A, and that the remaining provisions of subsection 2 down were simply fact allegations that went to punishment, and we're not, as she specifically said, we're not elements of the crime. Last year, in a panel opinion offered by Justice Stiglitz and joined by Justice Hardesty and Justice Perry Rodriguez, along with the same name, Justice Stiglitz wrote that absent aggravating factors, the battery statute, the battery offense, is a misdemeanor. And if you look at the statute, conclusion of 5 minutes of this court is absolutely correct, and I can't imagine any reason why Justice Pickering or Douglas, reach an opposite conclusion. If you take a look at the statute, as I said, NRS 481, NRS 481, subsection 1A, defines battery as any willful and unlawful use of force or violence upon the person of another. That is the state of defense. Those are the elements of the offense. Subsection 2 of the statute merely comprises a series of if-then punishments. So, for example, if a battery occurs without the use of violence or force, it is a misdemeanor. If a battery occurs and substantial bodily harm results from the deadly weapon that's not used, then it is a category of felony. If a battery occurs and a deadly weapon is used and substantial bodily harm occurs, then it is a category B felony. So those, and then there are other provisions that go on to identify, for example, if the victim of a battery is a police officer or a healthcare worker or a taxi cab driver, then there are penalties that result in that. Or there are provisions that talk about the nature of the batterer himself. If that batterer is on probation, or is a prisoner in lawful custody, or is paroling, then there are penalties that attach to that. So everything below subsection 1 speaks to penalties. It does not speak to elements.
Mr. Petty, on this, I guess two questions. The first question is standard of review in this particular case, and the second one is concern raised by one of my colleagues on the court as the plea agreement and sub 6 in the plea agreement, I understand that the consequence of my plea of guilty are that I may be imprisoned for a period of 1 to 5 years in Nevada State Department of Corrections for the crime of battery resulting in substantial bodily harm, plus an additional consecutive sentence of 1 to 20 years in Nevada State Department of Corrections for the elder enhancement.
Turning to your first question, standard of review, no objection made below. You don't need to challenge the sentencing scheme in the fashion that I've raised on appeal. So it is, it has to be reviewed for plain error. The court has to determine whether or not a plain error occurred and then it was the court's substantial injury to the defendant. With regards to the guilty plea, again, and the guilty plea memorandum, again, nobody below challenged or raised the issues that I'm raising to the court today.
Well, Mr. Petty, 2 points I want to ask about that. In the plea agreement, sentencing, as in many cases, was reserved to the court, so it was the court's decision to effectuate the correct sentence. Both parties appear to have been free to argue. And then the second question is, I didn't see in the state's response brief any assertion that you'd waived the right to bring this argument.
That's correct. Just to see, there is no in the brief challenging the ability of Mr. Rodriguez to raise this as an issue. I think it is should be reviewed for plain error, but I think plain error exists, and I'll get that into print. And you are correct, as is the case in Nevada. Absence of Cribs agreement with the court always has the authority to impose any sentence that is within the range provided by statute.
But can they, under Brialt, isn't it something that's waived if not? The plea agreement seems pretty straightforward to me, and to your credit, you acknowledge in your brief that trial counsel also argued for consecutive sentences in his own right, a sentence that was appropriate for battery with substantial bodily harm and then a second one for the elder enhancement. I'm just a little bit perplexed about what to do with it because I get that the state didn't say anything in their brief either, but it affects our review because we have no decision from the district court. Nobody debated it in trial court level.
That can be written by I don't think the record would be on a legal issue. The legal issue is before you. The application of employing authority in Nevada, Carter, Odoms, Garrett, which has never been disputed, was not disputed by the state. If you send it back for a record to be built, I'm not sure that there's anything more to say except, oh, yeah, there's these cases.
Well, but the Brialt case, you had a plea to, I forget the crime, but and a sentence that miscalculated the minimums to the disadvantage of the defendant was imposed, and we held that was a waiver. That even though the sentence was technically illegal.
I'm going to suggest that, that's a hurdle that I face. My argument on the prejudice of the defendant is obviously the increase in the sentence. He went from what could potentially have even sentenced at a Category C felony. He went from what could have been on the top to my sentence to 15 years.
No, it's a substantial sentence.
Substantial increase, which is why I make an argument about prejudice on that. The other thing that I think is just in terms of judicial economy, the court ought to retain this case and decide the issue that I've raised. Because if you say, well, it was a waiver, what you're inviting, and it's just part of our process, what you're inviting, of course, is litigation and a habeas petition for ineffective assistance of counsel. Why did counsel not catch this when we have cases from the 80s, 82, 86, and 89? But I believe at this point, given the structure of the battery statute, they can litigate that, but in terms of purely the court, it's not going to be better than it is today. This case presents a good issue for the court to decide with regard to the structure of the statute and Hobbs and Rodriguez and If in our fourth and last year, which I mispronounced that, we dealt with lesser included offenses. Again, the court said purposes of lesser included offenses are only to the elements of the offense, not to the building provisions, which is consistent with another case that this court decided a chance to talk about this as charity. And there's a body of law that this court has decided that these facts that I'm presenting to you today fit into very nicely. Would these facts give this court the opportunity to remand for an imposition of sentence?
I suspect it would be categories. Let me just jump in. I'm looking at your time, so I just have a question. In Rodriguez, we held under 2E that deadly weapon is a necessary, is an element.
No, you did not.
We did not?
No. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but no, you did not. What you, there is, with my apologies, there is a loose use of the word element in that decision after you already pointed out that absent aggravating factors, it's a misdemeanor. You could have used that word factor, or you could have used that word fact as opposed to element, and you would have got the same result in your opinion. The use of the word element, the way that you used it, was anything.
How can you, it feels like apples and oranges. How can you say, we're going to start with misdemeanor battery, and everything that changes the complexion of that from a misdemeanor to a felony is just a sentencing enhancement. So you're charged with a misdemeanor under how I read your theory of this, and then with an enhancement. So do they get a jury trial on it? They're charged with an under 6 month offense. What I mean that brings it to a whole different category of offense.
No, it brings it to a different category of offense for purposes of the punishment, and because the punishment is beyond the 6 month range, it's in the felony range, and therefore all the attendant rights to a criminal defendant, jury trial, etc., apply. But that doesn't mean that because it starts out as a misdemeanor, and these other aggravating facts that are found by a jury, which makes it a felony, defeats my theory. My theory is sound. It's the element of the offense, and then everything else adorns that.
But if it were a pure enhancement, would the jury trial right attached to it? I mean, I've always thought it was an element of the crime. The substantial bodily harm is an element of battery with substantial bodily harm, and you get a jury trial on all those issues.
Well, a jury has to make those findings. Hobbs says that it's not. They're not elements. Hobbs specifically says substantial bodily harm is not an element of the crime of battery. You can be convicted of that, but it is a factor that a jury has to find under Apprendi in order to increase the penalty. I mean, everything that I'm talking about today is within the ambit of what Apprendi teaches us. The jury has to make those fact findings in order to have, they have to make a finding of substantial bodily harm. They have to make a finding of the use of the deadly weapon, unless, of course, the defendant has pled guilty and has admitted to those facts.
Well, but there are cases where we enhance, like the domestic violence crimes, where it goes up. Those are not given to the jury, the antecedent.
But a completely different enhancement structure. The enhancement structure there is the existence of firearms in the convictions. If you have two or more firearms in the convictions, it becomes a third felony in the DUI context or the domestic battery. But there are three kinds.
And those are specifically exempted from Apprendi.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying Apprendi informs this. You can think of it this way. There are basically three types of enhancements. So the prior misdemeanor convictions that give rise to a felony, that's what one is. There is the standalone habitual criminal, which comes in and supplants the sentence and stands alone. That's what doesn't apply here. And then you have those situations where there is a primary offense that has a sentence, and with the establishment by a jury or by a plea of certain factors, aggravating factors to use the thing. It becomes a category C or a category B battery. Here, because it was enhanced and because there was that second enhancement, that's the error that we're talking about today. I would ask that you vacate the sentence and remand for imposition of sentence without a second.
Before you sit down, Justice Cherry, did you have a question?
if you go to trial on battery with substantial bodily harm of an older person, and the jury comes back and there's a lesser included of battery without the substantial bodily harm, what's the sentence in the misdemeanor?
It'd be a misdemeanor sentence. If no factors were found, if you tell me that the jury did not make those findings, then it would be a misdemeanor, and a district court has the authority to impose a misdemeanor sentence under, I think it's Kimball or whatever the case is that this court decided about a decade ago. Because once the charge is in the district court, the court has the jurisdiction to sentence on the resulting misdemeanor if that is the result.
Can you enhance the misdemeanor sentence of the 6 months to because of the older person?
Yes, you can.
Enhancement?
The NRS 193-167 allows an enhancement for a misdemeanor, but it is a misdemeanor enhancement.
So at least looking at what the jury would do, you would say that the substantial bodily harm is definitely an element because they didn't find that element, so they found the lesser included offense, or the lesser offense of the misdemeanor battery rather than battery with substantial bodily harm. Because substantial bodily harm is a big issue when you try these cases. You bring the doctors in as to whether the person was really hurt or not.
I understand.
But you can't, there's no way to overcome the fact that somebody's old. Believe me, I know, I'm sitting here.
I resemble that remark. But Justice Cherry, I lost my train of thought. It is the duty of the jury, if it goes to jury trial, to make those findings. If they don't make the finding of substantial bodily harm, then it's a battery. If the jury makes the finding, then that an unlawful use of force occurred.
Justice Perry, you had a question.
Just real quick, I just want to make sure I understand perfectly your argument. If the defendant were charged strictly with battery with substantial bodily harm, you're saying that the jury must find those facts that support the substantial bodily harm, or it would be a misdemeanor strictly.
Yes.
But if they're charged strictly with battery with substantial bodily harm, if they don't find substantial bodily harm, isn't the defendant found not guilty
of the charge?
Because it's part and parcel of the elements of that charge.
I think that in those situations, that's a charging decision by the district attorney, and a decision by defense counsel, maybe that they don't want to offer a lesser included to the jury. They don't want to offer the they want to try it on its face. Guilty or not guilty, up or down.
But doesn't undermine your argument that it's not an offense? Because
no,
you'd have to look to an underlining simple misdemeanor. I mean, if they're found guilty or not guilty of battery with substantial bodily harm, the judge doesn't just pop up and say, sua sponte, okay, it's a misdemeanor, I'll sentence him to 6 months.
You know, that's true. I mean, I don't know. I mean, historically, that is true. Unless the lesser included is offered, it isn't considered.
That's right.
And if the person is acquitted of the felony crime, the judge, you're right, doesn't say, well, wait a minute, I assign enough elements to at least establish the battery, except that the jury didn't. And because the jury, I'm assuming the jury didn't find, because we don't have, as a general rule, we don't have special verdicts. We have a general verdict. So we don't know if the jury, we don't know the jury's question on the existence of the battery, and I don't think a judge could second guess that and say, well, I saw battery. I think the judge is bound by the jury's verdict. And that's why that doesn't happen.
Thanks.
Go ahead. Yes.
So, Mr. Petty, is the legislature capable of drafting a felony battery offense?
Absolutely.
Okay. So why don't these fit it? Because what I'm hearing is it's a misdemeanor and everything else is an enhancement.
Because the way the statute is written, the structure of the statute, and over the years, the reading of statutes has evolved. I think someone once said we're all textualists. If you read the statute, subsection 1A defines the crime. Subsection 2, in that first category, are just if-then punishment statements. And that's all that they are. In Hobbs, this court said those if-then statements are not elements. In Rodriguez, Justice Felix, you said essentially the same thing. I can't imagine that any other member of this court would disagree with that, given the structure of the statute.
Mr. Petty, you've used up your time, but I'll give you 3 minutes in rebuttal because we've assisted you using up that time. And Mr. Plater will give you 3 additional for your argument.
My name is Joe Plater. I represent the state of Nevada. I think the question broadly is, what was the intent of the legislature when it drafted our penalty enhancement statutes and our battery statute? And that's what the court said in Almendarez-Torres versus the United States. The United States Supreme Court said the question of which factors are which in terms of elements versus sentencing enhancements is normally a matter for Congress, or in this case, the matter of for the Nevada State Legislature. NRS 193, starting at 0.161, lists, as I counted, about 10 different sentencing enhancements. The elder enhancement is one of those enhancements. And the legislature in Chapter 193 has carefully delineated those sentencing enhancements, what's required in some of those enhancements to use them when sentencing a defendant, when they apply, and how they apply. And there is no sentencing enhancement for substantial bodily harm when that results from a crime such as battery upon a person. The legislature in the state of Nevada clearly knows when to delineate something as an element and something as a sentencing enhancement. Substantial bodily harm is not found in as one of those enhancements. Now, under our battery statute, it applies and creates a whole new offense. When substantial bodily harm results, we have a misdemeanor battery converted into a felony battery. That's one of the things that we should look at. There's some other differences between our sentencing enhancement and that reveals our legislative intent and the crime of battery. For example, look at the age enhancement that was used in this case. The age enhancement under 193.167 declares expressly that that enhancement is an added penalty in the heading of the statute and in subsection 5 of the statute. We know from that statute, and in contrast, the battery statute doesn't mention that if substantial bodily harm results, there's an added penalty. There is no language like that in our battery statute. Under the age enhancement, the statute declares that the enhancement is a consecutive sentence of 1 to 20 years. In the battery statute, there is no declaration like that. Under the age enhancement, the district court makes specific statutory findings regarding certain criteria set forth in that statute in terms of how long that enhancement should be. There is no finding like that by the court in the battery statute. I think, as we've talked about today, when you make the charge, when the prosecutor brings a charge of battery causing substantial bodily harm, it's pled that way in the indictment or information. It goes to trial as a specific element, and the jury makes a finding whether or not substantial bodily harm is a result of the crime. And I think, as you pointed out, Justice Perry-Gary, if it's pled that way and it goes to the jury that way, that is battery causing substantial bodily harm. If the jury fails to make that finding, the defendant's acquitted. That's the end of the story. We don't consider anything else after that, which suggests that that's an element of the crime because it can lead to a complete acquittal for the defendant.
Would it also be true, Mr. Plater, that if it is charged as battery was causing substantial bodily harm, that the defendant would be entitled to a jury determination on substantial bodily harm under Apprendi? I mean, Apprendi would command that the determination of substantial bodily harm has to be assessed by the jury. So as I understand the symmetry, if you want to call it that, of Mr. Petty's argument, there must be a threshold determination of battery, somewhat like Justice Seda commented about in the case that Mr. Petty referenced, and then a separate determination is necessary for substantial bodily harm, either because, and I'm not deciding the question, I'm interested in your observation, but it seems to me that the factual determination of substantial bodily harm is compelled either because it is an element or because it's an enhancement under Apprendi, but in any event, It's a trier of fact determination. And I don't think the fact that it is assessed by the jury in a general verdict form answers the question of whether it's an element or whether it's an enhancement. I think we have to go back and look at the battery statute itself. You've done an excellent job of commenting about the enhancement statute, and I get that. But that doesn't mean that there aren't enhancements included in other statutes, not referenced in 193-167. So what about 281, what about 200-481, the battery statute? Why aren't those ifs treated as enhancements?
So there's a lot of that were in those questions there.
Yeah, sort of free-flowing. Sorry about that.
When we look at the battery statute, we find there's no consecutive sentencing that's going on. There is no factual finding by the district court. The jury finds this issue. We have a whole new offense. We have a misdemeanor that is now converted into a felony by virtue of substantial bodily harm. Those all have the earmarks of an element as opposed to a sentencing enhancement. Our position in terms of Apprendi that you were commenting about is that, I guess, first, Apprendi wouldn't apply because Apprendi, in the United States Supreme Court case of Apprendi, the court said any fact other than a prior conviction that increases the penalty range for a particular offense is essentially an element of the crime, and you have the right to have a jury decide that, and it has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. We don't think that the element of substantial bodily harm is something that increases the penalty range because it's a battery causing substantial bodily harm is a separate offense. It's a standalone offense. So you have the protection of a jury trial where the state has to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt already built into place, so Apprendi wouldn't even apply because we're not trying to expand the sentencing range of misdemeanor battery. We have a whole independent standalone offense that contains that element of substantial bodily harm. And the defendant has the protection of Apprendi already built into our case law. Where else did you want me to go with that?
Well, I guess with regard to your last observation, I'm not so sure that it comports with with Mr. Rodriguez's argument about how the battery statute actually reads. His argument applying a textual interpretation of the battery statute suggests that the substantial bodily harm question is if this, then that, if this, then that, if not this, then something else. But all of those conclusions are focused on the whether the crime is a misdemeanor, a Category C felony, or something more serious. So it seems like the interpretation of the statute is leading one to arrive at sentencing conclusions rather than elements of the offense.
Right. We don't see the statute as being broken down as a number of conditional propositions, like Mr. Petty argues, if this,
so,
then that.
So what? How would, in just doing a textual reading of 200-481, how would you determine a standalone offense for substantial, or for battery causing substantial bodily harm?
How does the state interpret that statute in terms of what the elements are? So we know that under 200.481 sub 1, a battery is the willing and unlawful use of force or violence against another person. And that statute tells us that's a misdemeanor.
And no, actually that statute, 481A, tells us that's a battery.
Right. That's the definition of a battery. That's the common law definition as well. And maybe the legislature could have drafted the structure, the physical appearance of it a little differently to make it a little bit more easily understood. But when we get down to the section regarding substantial bodily harm, we feel that that's an element that needs to be independently proved beyond a reasonable doubt by a jury or by the state.
Well, I don't disagree with you there.
Now, Hobbs, that Mr. Petty has referenced, in our view, does not stand for the idea that this court decided substantial bodily harm is a penalty enhancement and not an element of the crime. In Hobbs, that question wasn't even before the court. In Hobbs, the issue was, what is the meaning of battery? The defendant was arguing that he needed to suffer some type of bodily harm or violence to his person. And the court said, no, we don't need that. You just need an unlawful application of force to the person. And I think the question was whether spitting on the person could constitute a battery. And the court said yes. And the court said, now, it's true, as you look at the statute, there is the phrase substantial bodily harm. And the court said that's not an element of misdemeanor battery, but it is a sentencing consideration. Now, maybe the court could clarify that a little bit, and maybe it wasn't artfully expressed, but I don't think the court meant to say definitively, especially since it's dicta, and it wasn't even an issue before the court, that substantial bodily harm is not an element. Of course it's not an element in the issue that was presented to the court in Hobbs, because they were considering misdemeanor battery. So it's not an element, and it is a sentencing consideration in the sense that if you have felony battery, that the penalties are greater. So I don't think Hobbs controls it.
Mr. Plater, don't you think it lends itself, the if this, then that we're talking about in 241, it would seem where it identifies as elements, it lays out a sentencing range. So it would seem if this, as in 2E or 2B, then that's the offense. It's not if this, then add that, which is what an enhancement does. I mean, enhancement tacks on to something that's existing. I mean, why don't we just read this? These are just elements of charges.
Yeah, and see, maybe we're getting hung up on the way we think statutes should look. Mm-hmm. Because what's happening here is, in our view, we have a definition of misdemeanor battery, and then we say, oh, and if there's substantially bodily harm, we have a Category C felony. There's nothing wrong with that, is there? There's nothing wrong with the legislature saying, here's our definition of battery, and then later on, adding an element and a penalty in the same sentence leads possibly to litigation and the meaning of what those terms are. But that's what we think the legislature did in this case. So.
What do you say to the standard of review issue and the preserved error?
Yeah, and that's my fault, Justice Pickering. I was going through my brief and I said, are you kidding? Joe, you didn't even put it in the standard of review. And I never do that. I always try to put it in. And I'm looking. So I agree with Mr. Petty. I think, as he conceded, I think the standard of review is plain error because there was no objection. So in reviewing this, the court has to find error that's, by a casual inspection of the record, plain. It just stands out by itself. It doesn't have to be any significant argument about the issue. And I don't think that's
the problem with that.
Yeah. So we think plain error is the proper standard of review. And I'm sorry, I didn't put that in my brief. As to the waiver issue that you were bringing up, my feeling was I didn't want to challenge Barrett. I took this court's pronouncement as the law that double enhancements are prohibited in the state. Our feeling is, if this is a double enhancement, it's an illegal sentence, and you can't raise it at any time. You can raise it at any time, and so the issue was before the court in that context.
So, Mr. Plater, Mr. Petty suggested we remand the case to the district court and to go through these various issues here on it. What's your position on that?
Our feeling is this man pled guilty to battery causing substantial bodily harm. He was properly sentenced under the age enhancement. The sentence is proper. There's nothing illegal about it. He pled to that element of the crime, in our view, so that the court should simply affirm the judgment of conviction. There's no reason to remand the case.
One thing caught my eye reading the briefs, and I don't remember whose brief quoted this, but it was a U.S. Supreme Court case saying you can look to other cases, other statutes, similar schemes, for some help on whether it's more likely than not that the legislature meant this as an element versus an enhancement. And I'm paraphrasing wildly, but how is this crime treated in other jurisdictions?
That was my argument, Justice Pickering. The idea is that if there's some ambiguity, the court is not clear or is unsure about the meaning of the statute that we're talking about, the court can look to other decisions, other statutes, like you said. Because the idea is that Congress tries to be consistent in its view and in its application of the law regarding elements versus sentences.
Well, let's ask it directly. Are there any other jurisdictions that say substantial bodily harm is just an enhancement, not an element of the crime? In other words, that have credited the position that your opponent is taking, or that credit your position?
Well,
either way.
In footnote number one, I said the issue of substantial bodily harm as an element of aggravated robbery is often seen as an element as opposed to I see my id there at 236. Shouldn't have been an id. It does not apply to Rodriguez or any statute.
Right.
It should apply to Jones.
Okay.
I think the same thing is true in the Rodriguez case that Mr. Petty was referring to, because there the court said that we have a weapon enhancement. It's a specific statute. And it doesn't apply when the use of a deadly weapon is an element of a crime, such as battery. So again, we have a situation where battery, if it's used by a deadly weapon, it's enhanced from a misdemeanor to a felony. And the court has held that that's an element of the crime, particularly where we have a specific statutory enhancement that's separate from the use of a deadly weapon. So that's a similar situation where you take a simple battery and use a deadly weapon, it's converted to a felony, and it's an element of the offense. You think that's very similar, analogous to what's happening.
Mr. Petty? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt your answer. How, if at all, do you believe Al-Tabi versus State is implicated in this case?
Is that the case that Mr. Petty cited? And all it talked about was a lesser included offenses. I didn't see that was dispositive or that persuasive.
Okay. Anything additional?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Justice, for the additional time. I think Al-Tabi is instructive because it tells us that there are elements that can be used for bigger purposes, and it tells us, more importantly, that penalty provisions are not elements of the offense. Going back to Apprendi,
that case was focused on how elements are applied for purposes of determining lesser included offenses. It would seem like how we approach those would depend on the purpose for which we're using it. So in that case, it was specifically referencing that it was being used for the purpose of determination of lesser included analysis. It didn't address or answer the question about dual enhancements.
Absolutely.
Did it?
In my reply brief, I pointed out that the case that I think is most dispositive is Hobbs. Because Hobbs says that the penalty provisions of the battery statute are not elements. And then I refer to this case Etab, only to illustrate that in other contexts, this court has also said that there are elements of offenses and the penalty provisions are those elements. And in the case that the court cited with Chance, it said simply the same thing. In the Etab, the court also quoted Apprendi, and I just want to quote one portion of this. This is found at 404 P3rd 765. It said, this is this court's understanding of Apprendi. The Supreme Court held that regardless of how a fact is designated by a legislature, any fact other than a prior conviction that authorizes the imposition of a more severe sentence and is permitted by statute for the offense alone must be found by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. That's what's happening here. That's what Cobb teaches. Those subsection 2 portions of the statute are facts that have to be seen by the jury in order to justify the penalty that would result. It doesn't change the analysis with regards to the fundamental crime of battery is a misdemeanor. Every factual finding that the legislature has designated that gets found by a jury that increases the penalty is an enhancement. The age enhancement or the older person enhancement that applies. Second enhancement, it should be remanded. And Justice Gibbons, it is not my suggestion that we should send this back to the district court and let them ferret through the issues that I've raised here. We could do that, but my hope is that the court will keep this case and decide the issue. And then, Justice Pickering, with regards to what other states have done and other statutes with regards to that, I'm sure that there are.
Finish the thought.
I'm sure that there are. A wide variety of statutory designed to capture civil misdemeanors and aggravated misdemeanors, degrees of batteries, aggravated batteries. I mean, there's a lot of language of it, but the statute that we have is 230 months. And I think to be true to what the legislature has given us, we have to interpret it in the fashion that I suggested.
May I ask one follow-up?
Go ahead.
We have a lot of statutes that sort of stack things. If you steal something and its value is $500, it's one thing. If its value is $2,500, it's another. The legislature is kind of marching through how it looks at the seriousness of the offense in those kinds of statutes. And it strikes me that that's what this statute is. And the 193-167 argument is those are true enhancements that apply to more than one type of offense. They're categorical. And so I'm not entirely persuaded by the textual argument, and I apologize for asking this so late.
May I respond?
Go ahead.
My response is something that I said earlier. There are a variety of enhancement schemes in that standalone, ritual. Those add on 193 enhancements, but there are other ways to frame enhancements, and Apprendi teaches us that it doesn't matter how it's designated by a jury, if the net effect is an increased punishment, if it enhances the penalty, that's become by the jury. But that's what makes it an enhancement, and that's what causes the, that's what, why we have to apply it here, because you also have that golden person. Thank you very much.
Can I ask one question? This is what I'm sorry.
Last question.
But Apprendi is if it enhances, if it adds to the underlying statutory sentence. This 204.81 creates the underlying statutory sentence.
I disagree with that. Okay. The elements of the offense is simple misdemeanor. Everything else that it adorns and makes it a felony, either category C or B, if we give a jury, if we said to a jury, we need you to make some special findings, then we might have a better idea, what was the issue that the jury might have received, what the only one decided. But the underlying offenses and the battery, those penalty provisions carry it into felony land, if you will, because the court has to, only a district court can sentence.
But we keep saying 1A is the underlying offense. That's definitional terms. On when we see battery down in Section 2, here's what we mean.
It says, subsection 2, what it says is if a battery occurs and these are if-then statements. If a battery occurs and a substantial bodily injury results, then this, category C, et cetera, et cetera. I read them as being if then punishment statements. I think that's consistent with Hobbs. I think it's consistent with fair reading of Rodriguez. Again, I think that the use of the word element later in the opinion could be modified to be factor or factoid. You have the same.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Mr. Petty, Mr. Plater, thank you for the arguments today. They were very interesting. Gave us a great deal to think about this matter. Stand submitted. We're in